Hey, you.
The beat is good. Thanks, Satan. Hello, good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to another episode of the Sega Guys. I'm Dan, the Mega Driver, a name that's a little apt for this episode. And with me, as ever, he's the sketch turner to my roadkill. It's James. How you doing, mate?
I'm brilliant, mate. Thanks very much. How's yourself?
Yeah, I'm very good, mate. I've been on a bit of a DC binge lately. After watching the Snyder Cut, I've been enjoying that. So a lot of the last few days, I've been binging on Injustice and Injustice 2. Superb games. Just completely addicted to them at the moment. I'm near the end of the story for both of them. But I mean, we're not here to talk about my DC binge. It's not so much Restore the Snyder Cut as it is Unleash the Cyber Razor Cut, isn't it? Because we're going to be talking about your top 15 Mega Drive games and looking back on one of our previous episodes and seeing how we've addressed one of your own injustices, as it will.
Oh, that's a nice tie-in, mate. Well played. Yes, the injustice, the great injustice of the early 90s, when I was denied a Mega Drive and was forced to play an Atari ST than a Commodore Amiga. I mean, I'm sure there was people out there playing games on far worse than what I was doing at that time, but when you had your heart set on that Mega Drive, it was a bit of a downer. But obviously, as people who follow us both on Twitter will know, last year, Christ, is it that long ago already? You set myself up with a wee package. You said you were sending me up a wee something. And that wee something turned out to be something rather big. And it's powered on running Mortal Kombat 2, which isn't one of my games, by the way, so I can say it. Just running just now is a little bit of kind of inspiration in the background, because I have been playing those 15 Mega Drive games again today, just solidifying my choices. There's been a couple of tweaks. It's basically, since I got the Mega Drive and obviously got the EverDrive and access to the library of Master System and Mega Drive games, it's just been kid in a candy shop stuff. So this is the 15 games which, for maybe, you know, personal reasons from leaning towards an Amiga past, there's maybe one or two in there that kind of attach to that, but there's a load of games in there, games that I never got a chance to play back in the day, games that I wanted to play back in the day and only seen in magazines and heard talked about at school. So yeah, this is from, I think the funny thing was that the initial challenge was 10,
and then that's right.
And then I says, can I go to 12? And you went, right. And what's up, mate? I need to go to 15. It's too hard. So
let's be honest, we could do 100.
Mate, the games I've left out, the games I've swapped, honestly, it's been hard picking 15 games. But I think if you only had a Mega Drive and these 15 games on your shelf, I don't think you'd have a bad time.
No, not at all. I mean, this goes back to the Mega Drive celebration, didn't it, that we did in, it was October, wasn't it? October was the Mega Drive's birthday. So here we are nearly over 6 months ago. We did that one. Where's that time gone?
You think of how long ago you sent me. I mean, I was still waiting on my Series S.
You were, yeah.
Dispatched, mate. So it was a long time ago.
I think it came the same week, didn't it? I think it came a few days before your Series S. So you got two consoles in a week.
Yeah, because the kind of note you put on there, you know, from my Sega brother from another mother, you know, this was meant to tide you over until you got your Series S for Christmas. And the funny thing is that the Mega Drive is powered on and the Series S is in the cupboard. So which one had the longevity?
We are the Sega guys after all.
Well, it's only right, you know. So I think these 15 games will be, they wouldn't leave you disappointed in terms of genre, in terms of gameplay, in terms of longevity, challenge, you name it. I think it's 15 really good games.
yeah, I think when our listeners get this list, when they hear us, when they hear us talk about these games, I think we'll hear many agree with us. But it's been really interesting seeing this list myself, because I was really pleased to get you them. After hearing, we've discussed it many times, how you wanted a Mega Drive, you got an Atari ST instead of an Amiga, and you were swapping discs four times to play Street Fighter 2. And then you did get a Mega Drive very briefly when you had your Saturn. But it felt like the right time for you to go all in, especially with the EverDrive cart that you got in the end as well. So now you've got access to the whole library. And it's just really interesting to have, four or five months on, these are the games that have really stood out to you. And of course, there's so many good ones on there. So yeah, really looking forward to getting into this one.
Yes, this is my Mega Drive, and it will never be taken from me. So I think, with that said, mate, I think we'll get into it. So just a kind of caveat to start things off is that the games aren't in any particular order of preference. They're just how I wrote them down, or when certain games, because I had a list. I think I had a list of about 25 or 30, and I was kind of cutting on the Notes app and the iPhone, and cutting lines out and pasting ones in. So this is just a kind of final list is how it stood, after being edited. So we'll kick things off, and I think it's only correct that we kick things off with Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
Going in all guns blazing, mate. Obviously, no secrets here. It's my favourite game of all time. But mate, tell us how this one's grabbed you.
I think it just builds on everything that the first game did, and just a whole lot more. Level design, obviously, Tails is on there, and he has kind of gameplay mechanics in the solo player, but that split screen two player mode obviously brings a whole new element to it. You're obviously racing one another. It's bigger, brighter, louder. I think it's possibly the perfect platform game. I don't think there's no aspect of it where I think you feel being cheated. I think it's very challenging but fair, I think is the best way to describe it. I just think it really is up there with, it's probably the best platform game and 2D wise of all time. Just again, it was a game that back in the day with Sonic Tuesday, we all heard about it, gutted I could never take part in it. But getting back, obviously, now with kind of today's eyes, but still having roots in the early 90s kind of gaming scene. I mean, my closest kind of comparison to Sonic 2 in terms of back then was Zoo. Just Sonic 2 is just, everything about it, as I said, level design, the music, the soundtrack is phenomenal. Just a brilliant, brilliant game, and the best game of the Sonic series, I think, on the Mega Drive by far.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with it being the best platformer, because as I say, it's my favourite game of all time. It's the game that made me demand a Mega Drive. I think I told this story when we were doing the Mega Drive anniversary, but we were playing, my brother had a Master System at the time, and he had Sonic 1, and when I saw Sonic 2 running, we compared it to his like Master System version that he'd got, and I was like, oh yeah, we need to get a Mega Drive. So it was a present to all three of us, all joint, and it was that game that tipped the balance, and we just was not disappointed when we got it. The split screen, the multiplayer is amazing, as you say. Not so amazing in the end for me, because I played it so much and was so good at no one else in my house or my friends or family would ever play me.
Basically, you set the bar too high, mate, is what you're saying. That was it.
Yeah, I didn't even try to like make it fair or let them win or anything. I was just too competitive, which killed all my competition, unfortunately. But I love playing the game. I can't find a single fault with it. I remember there was a few reviews. It said it was too easy, and to be honest, I can go through it in about less than half an hour on one life these days. But this is my favorite game of all time. This is a game that I have without fail played through at least once a year, many times when I was a kid. And when I was a kid, I struggled. I remember being stuck on every single level bar the first one. I was because I beat the Master System one, thought my skills would carry over. They didn't. I got stuck on the Chemical Plant Zone with the Pink Water. I got stuck on Aquatic Ruin. I got stuck on Casino Night. Every single level I had to practice and practice and practice to get through it. And it took me forever to get through there. But, you know, in the end, I did it. And it's ingrained in my mind now. I do the special stages and I've got the runs memorized. I can't remember what I had for breakfast this morning, but I can remember what order the rings come in on the special stages. but what a choice, mate. It's, as I say, it's my favorite game of all time. And I could probably spend the whole next 2 hours just talking about it, but I suppose we probably should move on to your next choice.
Yes. But no, I think we kick things off with a bang there, and I think it's a great choice, given that it's your favorite game. It's very much your Sega Rally.
It is, mate. And one day maybe we'll do my favorite Sega and interview each other.
Oh, no, that's an idea, by the way. Let's put that one in the back burner, right?
Add it to the list.
Add it to the list of many. So the next game then, again, another absolute corker. It is Streets of Rage 2.
Good God, you mean these are all bangers so far. Well, I mean, two for two. Two, as far as I'm concerned, two of the best games of all time. But, mate, was this the first time you played it? You got this Mega Drive?
I've never played an actual Mega Drive version. I had played like emulated versions via iOS and obviously on the 360. I remember many years ago, you're talking Xbox 360 era. My mate Mark had it was like a kind of Mega Drive collection on the 360, and I'm sure it was on there because we played through it, kind of three quarters of the way through it.
Yeah, I think it's been on 360. You had a standalone Streets of Rage 2 Xbox Live Arcade release. You had the Streets of Rage Trilogy Sega Vintage Collection release, and you had the Ultimate Sega Collection. compilation disc release. There was no shortage of releases on the 360, mate.
It's been about then. But no, I mean, again, it built on everything from the first game. You know, the first game was a kind of like a good blueprint, but this again was just, the sprites were so much larger, the colours were so much brighter, the soundtrack, the level design, the layout, and I think coming off the back of that, you know, Final Fight craze that was going around at that time, you know, obviously it was influenced heavily by Final Fight, and one of those kind of aspects where, well, if we can't get Final Fight on the Mega Drive, then to hell with it, we'll do our own version. And as great as Final Fight is, and as similar as both games are, you know, it's Streets of Rage, it feels like an arcade game but doesn't. You know, like Final Fight, if you play it just now, it just feels like a coin-op game, whereas Streets of Rage feels very bespoke. It feels like it expands on that kind of arcade experience a lot. It's tailored for the Mega Drive. It just fits. It's a nice feel. And that's just, again, just an absolutely brilliant side-scrolling beat-em-up. Challenging, very, very challenging. It's falling down holes and getting done by electric cables and whatnot. So again, it's just I've never got to the end of it. Just playing through it. It's just a brilliant side-scrolling beat 'em up. Takes all the best aspects of what Final Fight did, and as I said, it just improves on them as a home game. You know, it fits the Mega Drive so perfectly. The feel of it, the controls, the whole spirit of the game. It fits perfectly.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. It's again, it's near perfect, that game, for the Mega Drive. It feels like it was the game the Mega Drive was made for, in the same way that Sonic 2 was. It's interesting about you saying a challenge, because again, in the mainstream, in the media, the one thing that it got challenged for was a lack of difficulty. But again, this one, I first played it when a friend of mine rented it from the local video shop, and we rented it out pretty much most weekends for a good few months afterwards, to one of my mates eventually bought it. And yeah, it takes that Final Fight template. And the first game was, you know, it wasn't up to Final Fight visually, but I think Streets of Rage 2 is. It's so bright and colourful. The sprites are so huge. The characters are so bold. And the music, you just can't talk about Streets of Rage 2 without talking about the music. And that soundtrack is one of you've got bits of everything in there. I'm trying to think of the song that's by it. It's the song in Streets of Rage 2 is called I think it's called Dreamer, but it sounds very similar to a song by the Shaman. Listen to them next to each other.
Oh, they need to check that out.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. But even more than just the music, I mean, the sounds, you know, when you punch things, it's so satisfying just to hit people.
Oh, you smack somebody with a baseball bat, man. It doesn't matter what speakers you've got, man. You're feeling that shit. That's you know, it's... it's like...
That's it. And that's what's so important. Just the way that every punch feels to... You know, you feel that impact, and they react the way. I remember John Lumen did a review of Streets of Rage 4, and one thing that he got that it was like one of those things. It was like those that's it moments was the when you punch someone, the way that they react on screen, the subtle shakes and the subtle movements they do is something that Streets of Rage as a series does so well. Final Fight does it as well, so it just nails everything so perfectly. All these hallmarks of what a beat 'em up should be. And you say about her how it felt tailored to the home. It really did. Whereas Final Fight is a coin guzzler. You know, it's made for you. It's made for you to keep putting your 50p's in. I've got it on Xbox Live Arcade, and I've got it on a Capcom collection somewhere. And those ones, I mean, you've got infinite continues, and I think when you get to the Bay Area, like the fifth stage, you're just hitting continue, just because it gets so ridiculous. Whereas Streets of Rage 2 feels a lot more fair. The move set is a lot more varied, so there's a lot more variety in there. I mean, Final Fight's a classic, and we've both spoken about our love for Final Fight before, especially the Mega CD port.
Yep.
But Streets of Rage 2 beats it in every single category, as far as I'm concerned. Even visually, I think Final Fight's graphics may be more detailed, but Streets of Rage, I think they're more visually appealing.
It's got a sort of almost like a kind of comic book look about it, but not in a bad way. You know, yeah. it's very colourful, very vibrant. Those sprites are just ridiculous. I mean, even hooking the Mega Drive up to the 55-inch TV we've got in the living room, and it's like bloody size of the I pick Axel just by default, and it's like bloody size of him. You know, it's massive sprites that they've got. So and the moveset you mentioned, I mean, it was obviously brought forward from Streets of Rage 1, but I love how whenever, obviously, you go into a grapple, and then I think is if you press, is it C, you kind of somersault over them.
Yep.
And then you can press, is it A, just to suplex them, you know?
Yep.
You know, so you've got that whole, the Final Fight's got, obviously, the same idea as what Streets of Rage has got, your special, you know, like punching or like kick and jump together, or attack and jump together. You do, I think Axel's got his kind of, these multiple flaming fists kind of uppercut that he does.
Yeah.
And then obviously, like in Final Fight, they've got their kind of, like, is it Cody does a big roundhouse or something like that that he does. Yeah. There's not that kind of variation in throws. I think in Final Fight, only Hagar's got. The difference is he can either pile driver or suplex, if I remember. So, in the Streets of Rage, as you say, it's a bit more varied moveset. You know, you can almost, it's a bit more stylish, the combat almost in Streets of Rage 2.
It is. There's a lot more like combo potential. And I can't remember what they call the moves now, because it's the B button's your standard attack, C's jump, but I think it's like your rush moves or something. They gave it a name in Streets of Rage 3 that I can never ever remember. But those moves, you press the A button on its own and you do like a I think it's a blitz move, and you get everyone in the area, or if you press forward and A, then you do your combo move. Just that variety that you've got with the characters, and of course you've got a lot of variety in size as well. You've got Axel and Blaze, which are kind of mid-level characters, and you've got the little Skate, who he can't really throw people, but he jumps on the back of the head and starts punching them in the back of the neck, which is hilarious. And then Max is just Hagar. Obviously, he's a wrestler as well, and he can do the whole old jump and throw. It's not quite as iconic as Hagar's pile driver, but I think he picks them up and he just lobs them on the ground, which is funny. But if you can get behind them, if you do the jump and attack, he does this backbreaker, and we were saying about the noise it makes, the noise, it's like it'll make Bane blush, mate.
I will break you.
Oh, another one I could talk about all day, mate, but we've got 13 more to get through, so moving swiftly on, what's your next one?
My next one is another one that we've brought up on a previous episode, simply because of the absolutely gorgeous visual style of it, along with the amazing platform gameplay, and it is, of course, Disney's Aladdin.
Did you look at my top five Mega Drive games, mate, when you were putting this together?
I swear to God, I didn't. But see, if it's eerily similar, then I can only apologise. But I suppose the first two are kind of givens, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Obviously yourself, but Aladdin, again, a game which I only briefly played. A school friend, as I said before, had the Mega Drive 2. And I had a very, very brief shot of, I think it was actually the Aladdin pack that he got. I'm sure he got Aladdin with the console. And I had a very brief shot of it. And when I played it back then, you know, it was just jaw-dropping how smooth it literally was, like watching the cartoon. You know, it was everything about it. Again, challenging platform gameplay, very charming graphics, lots of kind of little Easter eggs from the movies, you know, like Robin Williams Genie appearing, you know, Apu running about. You've got the bonus stages where you've got kind of the barrels falling down, all that kind of thing.
That's just Bastion held up, he's like imprisoned in the in the dungeon. I don't know if you got to that bit, just a little bit like that.
There's lots of, you know, great little Easter eggs from the actual cartoon itself in there. And I think it's just, as a game, it's, again, it's just a fun platformer, and my wee girl is drawn to it straight away. She loves it. She loves playing Sonic. I put Sonic 1 on, and she's now just starting to grasp pressing C to jump, and can now use left and right on the D-pad, so she's getting there. But whenever I put Aladdin on, and she hears that title screen music, that's her. She's over, you know, she wants to play it. And I think, again, it's just that and The Lion King, I think, are very striking visually, because they managed to capture the whole atmosphere of the actual Disney movie itself, which, given the technology at the time, and the kind of budgets that were being spent on animation for Disney movies at that time, I think it's testament to the system that they managed to capture that so perfectly and combine it with an absolutely brilliant game.
Yeah, Aladdin is extremely challenging as well. So best of luck to the little one. it can be brutal at times. I mean,
it's brutal for me.
Yeah. That's one I got stuck on for ages. I think the escape when you're in the cave is a bastard of a level.
On the magic carpet.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yep.
It's brutal. But yeah, it's another one of my favourite games of all time. I remember that one sort of came out of nowhere, and it does get a mention in the Console Wars book as well, because it's at one of the either CS or something that Nintendo actually catch sight of it, and I think there's a bit of an oh shit moment that they see it and they look at the one from Capcom which they got, which, you know, the SNES game is a good game, but it doesn't feel as fluid.
But it's not that.
It's not. Aye. Yeah. It's just seeing that game in 1993. It's amazing that the Mega Drive was 5 years old at that point, which, and they're squeezing that sort of those sort of visuals out of it. But yeah, one very, very special to me, because I got it for Christmas 1993. I remember my dad. I just got Street Fighter 2 for my birthday in November. And obviously the big thing was Street Fighter 2, Mortal Kombat 1993 was the game to have. And he's like, all right, so what do you want? Do you want Mortal Kombat? Yeah, I was like, no, I want Aladdin.
What?
Who you want that shit for?
Would you want a cartoon? You want to rip people's heads off, son?
But yeah, it's just one of those times when I think it was either Aladdin, Sonic Spinball or Mortal Kombat, and I love Mortal Kombat. I'm not so fond of Sonic Spinball, but Aladdin, I know I got the best one out of the three then, because that game is absolutely timeless, as we saw, because they recently re-released it with The Lion King.
Aye, that's right. Yeah, the double pack, that's right, aye.
Yeah.
I've not bothered to pack that up because I've got the Pierre de Resistance. You know, I've got the real thing. I don't need no remaster.
Yeah. The thing with these remasters a lot of time is it's a similar story to Streets of Rage 2, actually. Playing on modern consoles, I do feel like there is sometimes a little bit of latency, and it's probably very low, but it's there. You know, I can feel that something's slightly different with these games. Mm. And, you know, they're still good, but playing with a wired pad on an older system, you can feel that there's less latency. And it's just, I don't want to sound like a purist or an elitist, but I just think that a lot of the time that you can tell the difference, and that it does feel like this on the original hardware is the way they're meant to be played.
Exactly. And you do, you feel these things, especially if it's a game, you know, from your past, from your own gaming history, that you've got. It's a muscle memory. You know how, it's the same whenever I'm playing Sega Rally. It's like, I know how it should feel whenever I'm taking those corners. I know when I should, you get the feedback off the game itself. You know when you should be pressing these things. So I agree, mate. I think there's a lot of games that if they're not played on the original hardware, then, you know, emulation's great, and it's good to kind of bring it to a new audience and keep it alive in some form. But I think if you can find a way of playing it on original hardware, then it's definitely the way to do it.
Absolutely, mate. But yeah, superb pick there. But I think your next one is one that I don't think is available in any other hardware. So if you want to take us to your next one.
Yes, this is a merge of two of my favourite movie characters. That is, of course, RoboCop versus the Terminator.
Terminator.
Come quietly or there will be trouble.
The soundtrack on that one's amazing, but oh yeah, I suppose that one speaks for itself, doesn't it, making the appeal?
Well, I mean, any day, mate, my favourite movie of all time is the original RoboCop, right? Before, you know, back in my youth, I had, you know, various RoboCop collectibles in terms of, you know, NECA figures, you know, big 18-inch tall model RoboCops, ED-209s, Criterion Edition DVDs, just, love RoboCop. And RoboCop versus the Terminator, as you'll know, that there was a multi-part graphic novel.
Yeah, I never got to see it, actually. I really should just download it. I'm sure it's available somewhere.
Well, yeah. Again, comics that I had, I bought them all from Forbidden Planet in Glasgow back in the day. They're long gone. I don't even want to check on eBay how much they're worth. I'm not even going to torture myself by doing that. But again, they were very dark. And what I like about the game is that it kind of keeps up that trend. I think it was Frank Miller that did the RoboCop versus the Terminator. For some reason, his name's coming to mind. If it's not, then people can correct me. But the game keeps up that trend. That kind of that style, it's very gory. You know, you shoot somebody and it's and just explodes red goo. But again, it's just a very challenging game. Great fun, looks gorgeous. I mean, they've nailed RoboCop down to a T. The way he walks with the gun, it's spot on. You know, the angle of the support arm hanging out there, just with the you know, he's got the point straight ahead in the walk. It's just it's bang on. The waist turned at the right angle, just to, you know, yourself, you can see it if I'm talking about it. And there's been so many RoboCop games that I've played down the years. You know, RoboCop on the Spectrum was a huge favourite. I mean, I loved that game. RoboCop 2 on the Spectrum was crap. RoboCop 3 on the Amiga was like a first person isometric, you know, kind of 3D, kind of weird, flat polygon style. Just not a bad game, but just very, very bland in terms of visuals. Tried to do something different and it wasn't great. RoboCop 2 on the Amiga actually was pretty good. Big sprites, bright kind of level design, but a bit too platformy. But RoboCop 2 on the Atari ST was just wildly different from the Amiga version. I mean, if you have a chance to look at RoboCop 2 on both platforms and even go and check it on YouTube, it's for being so similar in every other game. There must have been different developers that had the rights for the games because they're so, so different. But I always remember the Amiga version of RoboCop 2, they had the feet noise chunk, chunk, chunk. I was like, that's brilliant. He's got his feet nice. Robocop versus a Terminator, and I think it's just it just captures that whole spirit of the graphic novel of the series. And as I say, responsive controls, great level design. Obviously, you've got your enemies, you've got your T-800s, fully clothed or endoskeletons as well, fully clothed. I need your clothes, your boots, and your motorcycle. brilliant game. And as you say, it's never come out anywhere else. It's never seen any kind of remaster or reboot. I mean, I actually think that would make, with today's technology, look at how good RoboCop and Terminator look in Mortal Kombat 11, for example.
Yeah, it's the closest we got now.
I mean, you imagine that in a side-scrolling, you know, shoot 'em up platform. Jesus Christ, man, that'd be amazing.
It would. It's amazing that they managed to get those characters in Mortal Kombat, but it's disappointing that it was the new Terminator like version of the T-800.
Yeah,
hair and the goatee. it's still good. I mean, I was playing it with my son. We love Mortal Kombat. I think the Terminator is his go-to character in it. So I was choosing RoboCop a lot of time to obviously reenact that that whole rivalry there.
I think there's some footage I watched of MK11, and I seen RoboCop using his left hand with his gun, and that just triggered me. I'm like, nah, man, Murphy's a right-hander, never uses his left hand. Just enough of that. Just...
But I mean, the Mega Drive game, yeah, I'd imagine there's some sort of rights issue, which is why they had to use that version of the Terminator, which is why they couldn't use others from the franchise. I'm just guessing here, which is a shame because, yeah, we won't see this come back. But yeah, I'd love to see it, you know, come out to a wider audience. But it's just another one of these ones where, compared to, it's the best version of this franchise. The Super Nintendo version didn't have any blood in it. Changed the level design. Feels
shocker.
So a little bit disappointing that one. But yeah, the Mega Drive one was fast. I mean, even when he's going on the zip wires, all of a sudden his hands are going. it's almost comical to see it, but yeah, it's a brilliant game. It's another rental for me when I was a kid. When I was in my preteen years. It's brutally hard. It's absolutely phenomenally hard. I never could get past. I could get to where you're actually fighting like hordes of Terminators, like about the fifth stage or something after you beat Kane. Is it Kane from RoboCop 2?
Yeah.
After you beat him, I couldn't get much further than that. So I had to put the cheats on. I remember putting the cheats on, and even with the cheats, it wasn't like infinite life. It was still mental how anyone could actually do it. It's godly skills. So yeah, but what a game that is! Brilliant looking, phenomenal soundtrack, challenging, plays fantastically, and it's just such a wonderful depiction of both of those iconic characters. So fantastic choice, mate.
And I'm just thinking here. I think he's left-handed in this game as well because of the camera angle.
I think he switches. It's the same sprite each way, so flip.
I'm just realising somebody got sitting there going, well, actually, James, there's no excuse on an Xbox Series X, right?
Well, no. I mean, 16-bit, you know, Sagat's eye patch switches sides every time he turns around. So that's a limitation. But modern consoles should have that sort of limitation, which is less forgivable in the modern day.
Exactly.
There we go. Cool, mate. So what's your fifth choice?
It is an Amiga stalwart, but apart from the appalling music, which thankfully you can turn off when you're playing it, it is the one and only Sensible Soccer.
Still the best football game ever made?
Oh, it's the fact that all the squads are essentially from 92-93 season, which, making no apologies, obviously, that being a Rangers supporter, that was still the best season in my life. You know, winning a treble and going undefeated in the Champions League, you know, 1 point away from making the final, you know, of the first ever version of the Champions League. So it's all the teams of that era that are there. You know, Italian football was at its peak as well. The Milan team with Rijkaard and Van Basten and Hullet, and that Marseille team with Rudy Voller, you know, Abedi Pelé, Frank Sozzi, all these, Didier Deschamps, you know, all these players. So it's a football game very much of the time, and that you could go in and edit everything. There was no visual representation of footballers. Obviously, it wasn't that complex. It's all the same kind of wee sprites, and it was either ginger hair, black hair, or, you know, brown hair. That was about as much but no, it's just it's such a simple bloody game, but it's so addictive, and you can score some absolute belters on it. The only kind of thing I sort of struggle with is obviously using a controller to play it, because on the Amiga I used the Zip Stick.
Yeah.
So basically to hit a lob shot, and there was a trick you could do if you got to the halfway line out on the touchline and just held in the shoot button and then flicked the Zip Stick back and then quickly forward and then bent it, you could aim for the far top left corner and score some absolute belters. See if you pulled it off in the last minute against your mate to beat him. Oh, carnage. Scenes, absolute scenes. But no, it's just, again, as I said, so simple, and just a really, really brilliant, fun football game. And also there was two major football games of that time, and one of which may or may not make an appearance later. But I think in terms of just sheer simplistic raw gameplay, I don't think, you know, there's many football games that have come since that can touch sensible soccer.
No, I'd agree with that. It's definitely up there among the best of all time for me. It is simple, but it nails the feel, just the beautiful game, just so perfectly. And even though it makes it look easy, it makes it look simple, it really isn't. Games came before it, you know, Kickoff had the same overhead view.
That's right.
And there are others. Just couldn't nail the gameplay in the same way. I do prefer the Mega Drive version, and I know that I'm going to get a bunch of angry Amiga fans telling me that I'm wrong, and I probably am. I did like having three buttons to give you the different. I know on the Amiga, because I had a friend that had an Amiga, so we played it on there as well, and then I later got it for the Mega Drive. But I always felt more comfortable with the three buttons to vary your shot. So in the Amiga, I think it's very talented.
It's one button, mate.
Yeah.
It's one button. Let's not beat about the bush, mate. It's one button, right? Sometimes you could have two if you had a customizable controls and a two-button joystick, right? But if I remember on the Amiga, you tapped it to pass and you held it in to shoot.
Yeah. I saw someone recently say that that's the way it has to be played, that you hold the button to varying degrees to get your different shots off, and that the Mega Drive 3 button setup is basically heresy. But that makes me a heretic. I think I've got it actually on the Game Boy as well, which I've had for decades now, and that's a nice version as well. It's one of these games that no matter where you play, as long as it's a good port, and I've heard like Master System port's great, you can't go wrong with Sensi. And the Mega Drive version is just up there with the best of the best. So yeah, double up with that choice, mate.
I'm here as an Amiga stalwart, like it or not. I was back then by force, which has led to this episode. But not a heretic, mate. If it's all about playing it and enjoying it. There's obviously the Amiga versions of certain games. I think they were not so much better, but I think they were more suited to the Amiga than the Mega Drive, and some games didn't come across to the Mega Drive quite as well. Some were better when they came over, like Lemmings, for example. The soundtrack's a lot better on the Mega Drive, but no heresy, mate. You play what you want to play.
It's all personal preference, mate.
Exactly.
Yeah, but what a classic. I still play it. I've played it quite a few times this year. It's just one of these ones that's just easy to pick up and play. And it's like you were saying, it's a time machine into those early 90s football days.
Find yourself putting on your Peter Brackley impression from Football Italia.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was Football Italia back then, wasn't it?
Hello there, Peter Brackley here.
Yeah, those days, Football Italia, Panini stickers in the playground, all that business.
Need.
I don't think it goes without saying any self-respecting gamer needs Sensible Soccer in their library.
Yes.
Superb choice, mate. And your next one then is another one I believe has roots in the Amiga.
It does indeed. It is Mega Turrican.
Now, this one I haven't played an awful lot, and I didn't actually play it until sort of emulation a few years later. Now, I remember Turrican, which I played on the Amiga, and then I remember Turrican 2 was completely butchered on the Mega Drive, and it was called Universal Soldier. And took that long. Is Mega Turrican a port of Turrican 3, or...?
Mega Turrican, well, the thing is, there is a port of the original Turrican on the Mega Drive. Because I've got it on Never Drive.
Oh, right.
And there's a port of the original Turrican. But Mega Turrican is just like Turrican on speed. It's certainly more visually complex than anything that was on the Amiga version. Again, very kind of similar level designs, but far larger levels. A lot more, you know, exploration, a lot more scope, more enemies, more enemy types. Again, it takes a wee bit getting used to with the controls, because again on the Amiga, you had one button, so it was you pressed it rapidly to shoot, and you held it in to get your laser beam, and then you just rotated the joystick at the same time to make Turrican, that. But obviously with the Mega Drive, you've got those controls. I think if I remember on the Mega Drive, you can actually there's a jump button, but if you want, you can push up on D-pad to jump as well. That's coming to mind, I don't know why. It's almost as if they were kind of giving you the choice of, do you want to press a button to jump, or do you want to play it like the Amiga and push up to jump? But the only aspects that no Turrican game outwith of the Amiga can touch is the music. You know, Turrican 2's Final Fight score is one of my top video game music choices. I rank it above Halo's main anthem, put it that way. Chris Hulsbeck, man, what a legend.
Yeah,
just such an amazing piece of music. Telling you, after you finish listening to this, folks, if you've not heard Turrican 2, The Final Fight, then go on YouTube and listen to it. There's a remastered version and it's astounding. But in terms of gameplay, it's very much unchanged. It's the same basic principle. You know, get from A to B, various routes through the level, destroy enemies, collect power-ups, change your weapons. You've got your kind of special mode that you can go into where you shrink down and you kind of roll into smaller spaces and you can plant bombs and things like that. So it's just, again, it's a great running gun, you know, style shoot 'em up. But just with Mega Turrican, it does kind of take all the gameplay aspects and just puts it into, you know, levels which the Amiga would struggle to do, just based on sheer scale and graphical quality alone. They haven't changed the kind of the look, you know, they haven't tweaked with it. It's not like kind of Universal Soldier where they changed how Turrican looks. It looks exactly the same as he does on the Amiga. So there's that kind of familiarity straight away with the character. It's a brilliant game, and it's hard as nails.
Oh, it's absolutely brutal. I think all the Turrican games are tough. I think the port of the original one on the Mega Drive is definitely inferior to the Amiga one. But yeah, Mega Turrican, it feels like halfway between Super Metroid on the SNES. Sort of that Super Metroid is sort of the high watermark for side-on, you know, pixel art graphics on the SNES. And I think Mega Turrican really feels in touching distance of that. It's the amount of colours on screen, which is amazing for the Mega Drive itself. But the way it does it is amazing. It looks phenomenal. It feels like the bastard child of sort of Samus Aran and Mega Man. it feels like Mega Man for angsty teenagers rather than like angsty teenagers of the 90s, which would be you and I, James.
Aye, well, jeez. As if Sega Forever's tweet about the age of Virtua Fighter Kids didn't make me feel old, man. You've just buried me there, mate. That's it.
I didn't see that tweet about the Virtua Fighter Kids.
It was 20 odd years ago, 25 years ago or something, or 23 years ago. I replied to him, went, thanks, Sega. I was having a good day until you put that. You just made me feel ancient. Cheers.
It's like one of those, you know, you get those clickbait ads, don't you? Do you want to see what the Virtua Fighter Kids look like now? Click here to see.
Shundi is still drunk.
Shundi has a beard. He had a beard when he was a child.
He's a toddler, battering lumps at another toddler with a beard.
But yeah, Mega Turrican, it does feel like a more mature Mega Man. Maybe not as tight in terms of level design, but still incredible fun. Brilliant fun, and the explosions as well in that game. I think it's a bit, it feels full on. Even when you die, it's like,
aye. It's a fiery death, a loud and fiery death. You know you messed up in Turrican.
Yeah, it just bows down and explodes. It's everything just seems to explode into a cacophony of fire and death. It's fantastic. What do you want from a game?
It's another game that I think possibly if it was reboot, you know, to today, you know, with modern graphics, I don't know. Again, there's that kind of danger of wanting that kind of thing, because you just don't know if the kind of the modern looking feel would perhaps detract from it too much, because the gameplay is very old school, you know. Maybe an indie developer could come up with something. In fact, there was a game. Oh man, it was on the Dreamcast. It was an indie game, and I had it on my GDMU. Name escapes me. I'll put it out later on after this episode goes out. But it's heavily, heavily influenced by Turrican. But it's not kind of like modern graphics. It's a vague step up from what Mega Turrican looks like. In fact, I would probably say Mega Turrican probably looks better than it. But people have tried to kind of replicate it in other kind of, you know, projects. But I don't know if maybe like an all singing, all dancing 4K 60fps Turrican would quite hold the same allure as good old Mega Turrican or Turrican 2 on the Amiga, which is just a phenomenal game.
Yeah, well, you can get them all now on the Switch and the PS4. I'm not sure if they actually came to the Xbox One, but there was, I think it's Turrican Flashback.
Is it?
Yeah, so because it was to celebrate 30, I think it came out last year. For the 30th anniversary. I'm pretty sure it's got two.
You've just buried me again, man. Angsty teenager. 30 years ago. Virtua Fighter Kids 20 odd years ago. Mate, you'll be measuring my coffin next week.
We know we're grumpy old bastards, mate, and I'm sure we're talking to a lot of other grumpy old bastards out there who like Turrican. They're going to feel old listening to this.
Yeah.
I don't make the rules. This is a 30th anniversary pack.
I know. You're not the Time Lord, mate. You're not Doctor Strange sitting there with your time stone, right? Just.
Yeah, if I was, mate, I'd be going back to 1996 of the Sega Saturn.
I'd be going back a wee bit, not quite that far, and tell myself, don't sell all your Sega stuff, James.
Oh, dear. Yeah, but they did get a re-release, so, I mean, that's... It shows that there's still a hunger for the series. Whether that translates to anything new, who's to say? But I think, yeah, I think out of the ones I've played, Mega Turrican is probably my favourite. So, yeah, superb choice, mate. So on to your next one. What's your next choice?
The next one I picked purely on visual style. In terms of gameplay, I think it's quite kind of generic in terms of being a side-scrolling kind of beat 'em up, but the twist is in the level design, which is very, very clever, and it is Comics Zone. Just a striking looking game. The fact that you are, and it's a, obviously it's a kind of beat 'em up, but you maneuver through the panes of a comic book with this ludicrous backstory. Some evil being that traps you inside the comic book or something along those lines from the intro. Yep. It's just a mental story. But again, from a visual aesthetic, it's gorgeous to look at. As I say, gameplay wise, it's pretty standard fare. But I think I just had to pick it because I kept going back to it and kept kind of playing at it, just because it was crazy watching this character either climb down from the pane above or kind of step through in the animation whenever he goes through. It almost kind of reaches through from one kind of pane into the next and pulls himself through. So it's a gorgeous, gorgeous game.
Yeah, it's one I actually owned back in 1995. It was another one I bought with my paper round money, and I think it wouldn't have been on release because I remember I paid 15 quid for it, and it had the soundtrack CD along with it. Which you look at that, try to get that soundtrack CD now, and it's, you don't get it for 15 quid. So I had a bit of a bargain back then. But yeah, I bought that with my paper round money, and this is one I absolutely love as well. Just so much personality in it, hence why I chose that one to open the show with Sketch Turner and Roadkill the Rat. It's yeah, the story's bonkers. I mean, but it does really well with it. I mean, the characters in it are really good. The fact that it's not Thanos or Darkseid putting, you know, John Kirby or Stan Lee into the book, you know, it doesn't need it. It did it with original characters, which was really cool. I actually really like the gameplay in it. It's tremendously difficult. I've never beaten it. I got the last boss once after loads and loads of practice, but I've never been able to do it since. It's absolutely brutal because you kind of have to vary all your moves. But I do like the way that Sketch moves around, the way all the frames of animation is. He's very detailed.
Oh, yeah, yep.
Has a massive move set. He's got the tools. It's just using them. Yeah, I've just never been able to utilize them all properly except for that one time. But I got to the last boss and just got absolutely annihilated and never managed to get back. Maybe one day. Save dates on maybe on an emulator or on the 360 conversion or something. I'll have to not play it on real hardware, I think.
Well, that's the thing. When I first played it, you know, obviously that kind of first bit, you start in the wee kind of lab and you're talking, and then you kind of press right and go to the first pane, and this kind of red monster kind of comes at you for the right hand side of the screen.
Yeah, Gravis.
So you battle lumps at him, and you think, that's it done. And he kind of, the animation is he kind of drops to his knee and then falls at his face, and then that's it. Right? Next. And this bloody hand comes on for the left hand side and goes, no, not yet, and draws another one.
Yeah, I know.
I'm like, oh, wait a minute.
that's cheating.
Hold on a minute. He's just drew as a caveat getting this. He's, as a pattern forming here, but it's going on. Whenever you kill something that's meant to stay dead, you don't get to draw it again.
Yeah, I mean, even getting through that first stage, I remember you can't take any damage in it, because I think your health carries through all the way through the game. You get one life bar.
Bloody hell, I never clocked that.
And I think it's one life bar and you get a few continues, but yeah, I used to think if I took any damage in that first page, and I was like, oh, I'm fucked. I've got to start again.
Again, see, there's this kind of harkbacks to Sega Rally here. If you mess up the first corner, you're hitting restart because you know your time's going to be crap. See, so
yeah, it really is.
If you take too much damage in the first part of the comic, I'll just hit the reset button, start again.
There you go. Both 1995 games as well. So there you go. 1995 gaming.
See, the pinnacle of challenge, folks.
Yeah, get good. And unfortunately, I've never get good enough.
No, I don't think I will either, to be fair. Yeah. I didn't have great success when I played it, but it did strike me. Again, just that whole kind of visual style was just, it's quite unique. I'd never seen anything quite like it. I don't think there's been anything like it since, to be fair. I've never seen anything try and take on that you know, living comic book.
No, the only one that's come close is a game that I've got on the Commodore 64, which is Batman Return of the Joker. And that has it. It's all set in... I mean, Batman doesn't go swinging through panes, and he's not like... it's not like Deadpool where he's aware that he's in a comic book or anything like that.
Well, it's a C64, mate. So, I mean, if you were managing to kind of climb through comic book panes on a C64, I'd want to know what upgrades you put in that thing.
No, it uses the whole aesthetic where he's set in a comic book. But, I mean, you're walking between screens and it's all framed in a comic book, and it'd be like, meanwhile, and Batman's just wandering around and most of the time we'd have a clue what to do. But that's the closest I can think of it. So, yeah, it's a top choice, mate. It's a game that I think anyone, again, if it's on various digital platforms, it's on Steam, it's on various Mega Drive collections on Xbox, PlayStation, Nintendo Switch. Even though it's challenging, and even though, as you say, it's not a world leader in terms of gameplay, but it's just one that you need to experience, I think. It's fantastic. So, yeah. So on from one challenging game into another that I think is challenging. So if you'd like to tell our listeners what your next pick is.
Yes, again, another game which I did play on the Amiga, and I believe the Amiga version is closer to a port of the arcade game. Now, in my mind, again, nostalgia doesn't kind of work very well with the Amiga, I'm telling you, because in my mind, this was an amazing ninja walking with his dog, industrial kind of background, detailed enemies, and then I had a look at the Amiga version after I played this version. And I'm, of course, talking about Shadow Dancer. But the Amiga version hasn't aged as well as the Mega Drive one, which I believe the Mega Drive version is along the same lines as like Toki, which is a bespoke version of the game. It is based on the arcade game, but it's not a direct port of the arcade game. And I think it actually helps the longevity of it. The core mechanics are the same. You know, you've got your ninja, you fire your shurikens. If you get up close, you slash with your sword. But one aspect that I don't recall being in the Amiga version was the jumping up and down between upper and lower tiers. I don't seem to remember that being a thing. I think you could jump up via platform, but I don't remember actually holding up and pressing a button to. I mean, it may be wrong, people can correct me, but that kind of mechanic was really good. You know, there was kind of manhole covers in the ground that explode and flames go up, and you've got to kind of manoeuvre. There's kind of obstacles, so you've got to go up onto the upper tier, jump across and come back down. There's hostages that you need to touch to obviously, you know, set them free. But one thing that has carried across from the arcade and the other versions is when you use your special and he goes, "Oh yeah!" I mean, it's the same sound bite. It's brilliant.
yeah, it's superb. It's another one that I didn't actually play until I was playing on an emulator. So I never got much exposure to this one, but you're right, it's its own thing, which was, in the early Mega Drive days, it was a bit hit and miss. So you have things like Space Harrier 2, which I think is so inferior to the original game. It doesn't deserve to carry the name. You got stuff like eSWAT, which, again, it's its own thing, and it's quite interesting.
Aye, that's right. Aye.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's better or worse than the arcade, it's just very different. But then you had straight ports like Altered Beast. But yeah, this was its own thing. And I think it is all the better for it. I think the storyline's completely different. The setting's different. But yeah, it's such a good game. It's another one that's brutally hard. See,
yes.
I think the same team did Shadow Dancer as did Revenge of Shinobi. Revenge of the Shinobi is one that I love and one that I have great memories of playing growing up. And they share a lot of the same gameplay tricks. Revenge obviously doesn't have the flipping onto the upper and lower levels of a stage, but they are very similar, even down to when you use your ninjutsu magic. But yeah, both challenging, but both really rewarding games. And yeah, it's saving the hostages and sicking the dog onto people. It's brilliant, brilliant stuff.
Set the dog on, folk. That's going to be fun. Kill.
I always screw it up when I'm trying to hit kill the people with the shields, because I can never get into them to take them down with the sword quickly.
I
always send the dog in.
Yeah,
and I always time it wrong, so it ends up getting twatted and lying on the floor, and it just makes me feel bad. You know, I've got a dog myself, as do you, mate. So.
Maybe Shadow Dancer was implemented to test prospective dog owners and see their reaction. Do you care for your dog? I'm not sending my dog in there, man. I'll do it myself before I send my dog.
If you care about your dog, why are you taking him with you in a war against an evil ninja army?
Because he's my best pal.
Yeah, mine will follow me anywhere, the stupid bastard.
Honestly, I mean, I've got two Labradors, but you would think they were collies. I literally kind of walk 2 foot and get one at either ankle, honestly. I don't know if either they love me very much, or they just basically know that I'm the guy who's got the grub.
Yeah.
I like to tell myself it's the former, but I've got a horrible feeling it's probably the latter.
Yeah, same with me and mine, mate. But see if you can send them to attack some sort of ninja assassins from the future or something. But yeah.
I hope it never comes to that.
Yeah, keep it in Shadow Dancer, mate. But yeah, it's a fantastic game. Really tough, though. I've never gotten past the first few stages, but it just looks gorgeous, and it sounds great as well. The music in there is fantastic.
It yep.
really nails the use of that Mega Drive sound chip. So brilliant choice. So the next one you're going to choose, if you'd like to tell our listeners.
Yes. Now, this was a tough one because I was torn between the first and second version of this game. I have the second version running just now, which if people have been listening, they'll remember that I mentioned that earlier and I said it wasn't this one. So I'm going with the original Mortal Kombat, just purely based on, again, nostalgic memories, you know, where I first seen Mortal Kombat. I still remember the hype and everything around, you know, Mortal Monday and, you know, Abacab B, and, you know, just getting it on the Amiga and running it with a 60 hertz disc. I had a disc that you could put your Amiga into 60 hertz. And whenever you ran Mortal Kombat with it, it was like full screen. It was great. The Amiga port is actually really, really good. But the Mega Drive game, I think, is widely recognised, despite having inferior visuals in terms of closeness to the arcade machine. I think the Super Nintendo version is probably closer to the arcade game. You know, Sub-Zero's got his proper stance. The energy bars are thicker. They look more like the arcade ones, but in terms of just sheer feel and fatalities and just capturing that essence of Mortal Kombat, the Mega Drive version, even today, there's something about that first game. As I said, I remember there was a cinema in Clydebank called, it was a UCI, it's now Christ knows what it is now, an Empire Cinema or something. But it was a UCI, and just a single tier. It was one of the very early multiplexes that opened up in Glasgow. And they had kind of like a foyer when you opened the front doors, and they had Mortal Kombat was in there at that time when it was new, and I had a couple of shots on it, but most of the time there was such a massive crowd around it you couldn't get near it. So it was one of those games that you watched, you know, more than you played. And then obviously you had the home ports that were announced, and as I said before, the Mortal Monday stuff, and you know, you had friends at school talking about, oh, tell me the gore code. What's the gore code? And oh, what's Sub-Zero? What's Sub-Zero's fatality? And what's Scorpion's fatality? And, oh, I can't believe you rip his head off. And you know, I just remember all that. And Mortal Kombat 2 is a far better looking game than the first one. Probably gameplay wise, it's tighter, more characters, more moves, probably better controls. But I just think there's something about the first game. I know there was a Mortal Kombat collection on 360 on Xbox Live Arcade, which I wish they would make backwards compatible, because I would buy it just to have an arcade perfect version of the first game.
Yeah, so do I.
Because it's just, it's a brilliant game. I just think it's a piece of gaming history. As I say, I've got a lot of nostalgia around it. And I think just because something that the Mega Drive, in my mind, and from what I was hearing at the time, I remember hearing SNES and Mega Drive owners at school going to each other, who's got blue blood, man? You know, it's like, you can't even bleed sweat, mate. You know, it's like...
it's like sweaty fighters in that SNES.
Aye, you know, it's like... and the Mega Drive owners were very happy, rightly, so that they had the definitive home version in terms of you had all the gore, you had all the fatalities. And while there was visual compromises made, you know, like on the opening stage, like Shang Tsung's on the background and he doesn't follow the kind of fight. His head moves in the arcade version. The throne room as well, where he sits, the red and gold throne room.
Yeah.
He watches from side to side on there as well, and you don't get that. But I mean, the kind of the main thing that sticks out is Sub-Zero's stance being different to Scorpion, whereas on the Mega Drive, they've both got Scorpion stance, just a colour palette change. But that just need to track for the gameplay in any way, shape or form. So I just think all of those things factored in when I put on the Mega Drive and I go to play Mortal Kombat or any of the Mortal Kombats, I always go for the first game. It's just got such an allure and a pull around it just based on all of that nostalgia that's there from my past.
Yeah, it's absolutely iconic, mate. I mean, it's one of those games. I think you mentioned when we were talking to Casey on the interview, you know, one of those moments we were talking about Shenmue at the time. But Mortal Kombat's another one where you just know where you were when you first saw it. And you're talking about the arcades in it in the cinema. I remember when I first saw it. It was in the pub, in a pub on a high street. And
what age are you?
Are you
no younger than me?
Well, I was in there with my dad. I wasn't in there on my own.
Oh, Dad, oi, get a pick and that's a point in the quid to play Mortal Kombat.
No, it was just Dad, how long are we staying here? Oh, just for a few drinks. Here's a quid to go and play that and shut up. But I remember it was anyone that's listened to this from Bournemouth will know or might remember The Crown, which was, it's gone through, we went through many names, it's now Sainsbury's, but I remember walking in there and it being in sight against the back wall as soon as I came in. It was a massive cab, people crowding around it, and yeah, you just, the first thing you notice was just you know, the blood and the gore and the fatalities and everything. So yeah, I remember Mortal Monday and the hype and everything. As I was saying, I had a choice out of Mortal Kombat, Aladdin and Sonic Spinball to get for Christmas, and I actually chose Aladdin, which I don't regret because I did play Mortal Kombat at friends. I had friends that had it, and I played it via rentals, and I still play it a bit today. Do I prefer 2? I probably do, because I did get 2 the following year. I chose that over Super Street Fighter 2 for Christmas. So Mortal Kombat won that festive season for me. But the thing was, Mortal Kombat 1 is still iconic. I think the soundtrack from Mortal Kombat 1 is best on the Mega Drive. There's just something about the way that it plays on that. The arrangement on the Mega Drive.
The bass is amazing.
It's incredible. Hey, I mean, I know there's a feel, and it feels very, you know, like Eastern and mysterious and sort of Oriental, and it feels like a Kung Fu movie when you listen to the original arcade version soundtrack. Mm-hmm. But the Mega Drive one is just so raw and hard, and it's just almost perfect. And of course, it had all the content as well. But more important than the content, I think the Mega Drive version plays the best. And I think there's been a few people that have pointed that out. I think Sega Lord X said in a video comparing the Mega Drive and the SNES ports, that the Mega Drive version plays better. There's slowdown in the SNES version, there's hitches and latency, and yeah, it does feel more sluggish to play when you play them back to back. So more important than any of the blood, any of the content, the fact that the Mega Drive nails the gameplay so well. You know, there are compromises visually, as you've said, but the fact that it gets the gameplay so tight, so nailed on. You know, I didn't even notice the differences in stances or Shang Tsung moving his head around. I just noticed that it played brilliantly, and you could rip someone's spine out of the head or something. You know, priorities.
Aye, you know, what's your life priority this week at age, 14? I'm going to rip Scorpion's head off this weekend. All right, okay.
That's it, mate. You had to get that blood code.
Aye. I mean, the thing is I was on YouTube as well a couple of weeks ago, and there's actually, the name escapes me, there's a guy actually doing like a fan project on a ROM of the Mega Drive version of Mortal Kombat. Right. And he's adding in sound effects, he's fixing colour palettes. I think he's trying to change Scorpion, Sub-Zero's stance as well. I think someone mentioned in the comments, and I'm sure he replied and said he's looking to see if it's possible. But there's, again, the fan community and the mod community, you know, taking that forward as well and trying to make improvements, or maybe not so much improvements, but maybe try to kind of do tweaks that either the developers didn't have the time or maybe the experience or the budget to do back in the day. So, yeah. I say again, I'll put the name out whenever the episode goes out as well, just to kind of let folk check it. But it's a Mortal Kombat 1 fan project, and it does quite regular updates with it, and just adding me various bits and bobs to try and bring it, you know, closer to the arcade while retaining that iconic Mega Drive gameplay.
Yeah, and hopefully it's still got the sound as well. I think the only version that was probably better than the Mega Drive one was the Mega CD one, but even that, because of the loading times, especially with Samsung's transformations, I think that can be a bit of a pain. But by and large, I think either the Mega Drive or the Mega CD are the way to go. So yeah, the Mega Drive version, just absolute classic, mate. Absolute classic. But it's not the only fighting game that you've got on this list. So if you'd like to tell our listeners, what's your next pick?
Well, I think people will know where I'm going with this. And Mega Drive owners from back in the day, you're lucky you didn't have Body Blows. Because it would have been on here, honest. Not. No, this is the version of Street Fighter that, again, I had only played it, as I mentioned on a previous podcast as well. My good mate Sam has, which was his cousin, had brought down his Mega Drive 2. With this game, a couple of six-button controllers, and, you know, that gives it away, you know, straight away. It is, in my opinion, the best 16-bit version of Street Fighter 2. It is the special champion edition, and just what a port, honestly. Just, you get the champion edition and you get the hyper fighting in one bundle. You can ram the stars as high as you want. was it 10 or 12 or something stupid like that?
It's 10 on turbo mode, and you can do a cheat to get 5 in champion mode, which makes champion turbo. It's mental, mate. Because in the SNES version of turbo, you have to do a cheat to get 10 stars. You can only do 4, whereas the Mega Drive does 10 by default. Just it's that blast processing.
And it was like, I remember I pressed down the D-pad, hyper fighting, stars, gling 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 gling. Oh fuck, it's still going, gling gling gling. It's like, Jesus.
Yeah, me and my mate used to only play on 10 stars. God knows how we did it, because I play it now and it's nearly unplayable.
No, man. I did try it and I can't. Maybe it's just my eyes are too old now, but I can't keep up with that. It's just not for me. But, you know, again, it's great that it had that in there. But no, it's an absolutely brilliant version of Street Fighter 2. As has been well storied on here, my Street Fighter 2 days were, unfortunately, on the Amiga with 4 discs. And I had 3 external floppy drives stacked up on top of my Amiga. So basically, you looked side on, you had 4 disk drive slots, the internal, and then these 3 external, and I had 1, 2, 3, 4. And you know, you want to fight Guile, you need to put in disk 3. So all you would hear would be these disk drives spinning to life at different times, and you were waiting ages for it to load. And this version is just insane. I mean, the turbo aspect, the turbo aspect, you know, obliterates any kind of PAL slowdown, because that's the one thing. I mean, I knew someone who had the SNES version of World Warriors, and what struck me about it was, while it was good, it was dead slow. you know, you obviously you lose at that point in time. You're not overly aware of kind of PAL borders and, you know, 50, 60 hertz at that age. That's just something that doesn't come in. But I was aware that it just didn't feel fast. Whereas with you know, Champion Edition and having that hyper fighting option there with the stars, you could basically alleviate any form of PAL slowdown and just play the game at whatever pace you wanted. And as a port for the, you know, there was always a talk that, oh, the Mega Drive can't do Street Fighter 2. Super Nintendo is more powerful, it can do Street Fighter 2. Because we all remember Street Fighter 2 whenever it came out. I mean, people listening now who are maybe of a more modern era of gaming, Street Fighter 2 is just common as muck. There's been that many games, that many versions, that many ports. But back then, like, Street Fighter 2, as we've called it on this podcast before, it was a cultural phenomenon, and a true gaming icon, which it remains to this day. And just, you had to have Street Fighter, you know, Street Fighter 2, everybody wanted that game. And obviously whenever the Mega Drive got it, they didn't just get a version of it, they got the best version of it, in my opinion anyway.
Yeah, and my opinion as well. As I said, I think we said it on our Capcom episode, if our listeners haven't heard that, we did cover it there. But yeah, just it's the best 16-bit version for me as well. I played both the Super games, and both of them have their flaws. Street Fighter 2 Turbo on the SNES is exceptionally good, but there's elements of it that I think feel short of the Mega Drive one. Visually and in terms of audio, it's probably better than the Mega Drive. But in terms of gameplay, especially since the Mega Drive version is more true to the original coin-up, especially when you take into account, you know, CPS1 combos, etc., and things like that, you take into account all the extra content, the battle mode and stuff like that, extra stars, extra options. It's the best version for me. It plays like an absolute dream. It's probably still my go-to version of Street Fighter 2. Even though I've got about 10 loaded up on my Mega Drive in my recently played list, it's either a special Champion Edition or one of the modded versions of it to fix the sounds or colour. But yeah, superb, mate. I mean, what more can we say? An absolute icon of video gaming, particularly that era.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Brilliant stuff, mate. So if you'd like to tell our listeners your next choice, go right ahead.
Yes, this is a very cheery, quirky, yet challenging platformer with some really interesting mechanics. It is, of course, Rystar.
I absolutely love this game. I could probably go on for years about this one, but James, I'll let you do the talking on this one.
Aye, as I said, just beautiful, colourful graphics, a very charming lead character, obviously a little star. Mental, you've also got your three buttons, one's to grab either, so you've got A, C to jump, B to grab. And it's not just enough for you to jump to make platforms, but you've got the mechanic of, you know, being able to actually grab, swing from things, pick up enemies, throw them. And just a brilliant, brilliant Wii game. One which I had never heard of until I started, you know, taking part in the retro community. I think it might have been Retro Boy John actually who put a tweet out. Either he'd put out as one of his kind of highlighted games, and it was shortly before I think I'd got the Ever Drive through. And I remember clocking it, going into a shot of that, and it really is. It's a great Wii game. People might, you know, leverage at it, oh, it's kiddie and it's too cute and, you know, why are you playing something like that, but it's quite deep in terms of that kind of challenge. There's kind of little, obviously your variant heights of stages, there's a wee kind of bomb dudes that kind of come at you and you've got to grab them, toss them, but sometimes they're in kind of tight spaces, like kind of it drops down, so you've got to kind of time it to drop down, grab it, throw it, jump up, and then grab the wee ladder and go back up to the next kind of tier. So that there's a lot kind of in there in terms of kind of gameplay mechanics. And I really enjoyed it when I played it. I thought it had a real nice kind of charm to it. Very 90s feeling, but just a really, really cheery wee game, and I just had a lot of fun playing it.
Yeah, it's superb, mate. I mean, for me, it's one of the best platformers of that entire generation. In fact, I'd probably say it's second only to Sonic 2. It's absolutely phenomenal. Just the way that it plays, The music is gorgeous. The music is absolutely amazing. It's visually, it's incredible. So well defined, so bright, so colourful, such a range of colours. All the parallax scrolling and all the visual trickery, it's brilliant. All the little quirks through the gameplay, you've got all the hidden areas, all the hidden stages and the treasures that you find. I first played this when a friend bought it back in 1995. He lent it to me and it's one that I just could not put down. And I was played it, and I actually got to the end. I could never beat the last boss. I played it via emulation, I played it through various collections since, but as you were saying earlier, it's not quite the same. So I actually managed to pick up a cart recently, and I played it through on that. I could have played it through on the EverDrive, but it's one of those games that's so special to me, one that I have such fond memories of, that I had to have at my own version. But I played it through and finally managed to beat it in the end. I had to look up how to beat the last boss, so used a bit of a guide at the end. But yeah, once I beat it, I just wanted to go through it all again, and I still want to play through it again. I started straight again straight after. Beautiful game, so charming. I think it's the greatest platformer of 1995. And when you put that in against games like A Star, Super Mario World 2, Yoshi's Island, Donkey Kong Country 2, those sort of games, it's, you know, that's no small praise, but I genuinely believe that that is the best platform game of 1995. It's incredible. Just the little touches in it, especially, you know, the little narrative. You've got the fourth world where you're on the music planet, and you've got to try and find the music boxes, and you give them to the birds to free them from their cages, and they start singing, and as they're singing, the music's changing, and what was once a very mechanical tune starts turning into all this singing from the birds. Or you've got the ice stage where you've got this little bastard that just keeps throwing snowballs and it keeps bumping spikes up to you and just being a pain in the ass for the whole first stage, and at the end you have a snowball fight with him.
I love that. That started off as such a calm, reasoned, methodical explanation until you got to the bit that annoyed you. It was almost like you were walking through the level there, bastard.
That's the thing. You've come through. You've just conquered the music planet. You get to the ice world, and this little bastard just keeps making your life a misery. And then you get to the end, and you don't have a conventional battle with him. You have a snowball fight. You beat him in the snowball fight, and he starts crying. And you feel a bit sorry for him. So then he helps you out in the second act. And then when you fight the boss, you got to throw food into the boss's mouth, and he brings you the hot food, and then he waves goodbye when you leave. So it's just like, it's just such a lovely little, he turns from this asshole at the beginning to your best mate.
Waving goodbye.
It's like, I don't know if anyone's seen that Nakey Jakey, The Last of Us 2 breakdown, and he's talking about things that are happening in cutscenes. You know, fuck violence in cutscenes. More my homies hate violence in cutscenes. But that whole thing that happens with this character all the way through the stage, as Nakey Jakey says, it happens in fucking gameplay.
And it's Goopy Goblin Gamer Brain.
Exactly, man. This game absolutely nails it. I just can't sing its praises enough. I absolutely love this game.
Oh, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, so yeah, you set me off there, mate. I absolutely adore that game.
Superb.
But before I could go on, it's another one I could go on for days and days about, mate, so we better crack on. Your next choice then is a little bit different, so why don't you tell our listeners what your next game is?
Yes, we're going back onto the pitch, because before you were buying packs of cards, going online and building ultimate teams, there was the original version of FIFA called FIFA International Soccer. There were no licenses, there was no ultimate team, there was no player image rights and, you know, accurate kits and all this kind of malarkey that we see today. It was just the first time that FIFA, or the first FIFA ever, so obviously, but it was the first time you had seen a football game presented in such a realistic manner. You know, as you went from sensible soccer, which while it had that amazing, addictive, simplistic gameplay, as we said, FIFA brought football to our screens with a kind of isometric 3D view, the angled 3D view of the park, very clever graphical technique, and just big sprites, referee on the pitch running about, you know, flipping the coin at the start, heads, tails, what way do you want to kick off, that kind of stuff. The aspect of whenever you had a corner, you had the kind of the viewfinder in one corner of the screen for you to see, you know, obviously when you wanted to aim your cross to go, and, you know, just so many kind of things that were new to a football game on a games console. And I always remember that Dutch goalkeeper, man. What a bastard, man. That's the thing, look, obviously, you're talking about, I was in secondary school when that came out, early years of secondary school, so as I was a goalkeeper from the age of like 12, so in football games, like sensible soccer, the goalies were literally just, they looked like outfield players. Well, we do look like outfield players, it's not as if we've got any kind of different visual features about us apart from a kit, but, you know, and the sprites, I should say, it was just, you know, they kind of flipped on their side and just kind of were flung through the air, and it was meant to mimic diving, but in FIFA, the goalies dived, and it was like one hand out to make a save. It was like a proper goal. It was, holy shit, man, he's a goalkeeper. You know, it's like they were making these one-handed diving saves and, you know, palming over the crossbar, and then you obviously had the crowds kind of interaction that, you know.
Yeah, the stadium sound at the time.
Yeah,
that worked so well. And I think, I don't know if it carried over to the next game, but it was such a jump in that game.
Yeah, I mean, it really was. And it was a game that I had the Amiga, I had the big box Amiga version, one of the many, or few, I should say, Amiga games that I didn't get from friends or from the Barras in Glasgow. I had an actual boxed game. But yeah, just a big box Amiga game of that. It was absolutely brilliant. I don't think there was too much between the Amiga and the Mega Drive port. I think the Mega Drive had a better colour palette, and, you know, from playing the Mega Drive version, the controls are definitely looser. I think the Amiga struggled from, the controls felt very tight. At times I felt as if you were kind of fighting against it, and you enjoyed it, but it just felt very kind of tight, whereas the Mega Drive version, I think it feels a lot looser, whether that's just nostalgia or memory failing me, I don't know, but I don't remember the Amiga game being quite as fluid to play as the Mega Drive one, but it was an absolute game changer. Again, another game that when it came out, everybody at school was talking about it. You know, if you weren't playing FIFA, then you weren't getting spoke to at playtime.
Yeah, it was a pretty seminal game when it landed, because I just remember the double page spreads. I think it was in official Sega magazine, maybe Mean Machine Sega. I can't remember off the top of my head. But yeah, I remember the double spread, and it was like, this is proper football. This is 11 aside, showing all the individual animations of the character players. And me and my brother were like, wow, this looks amazing. So he had to have it for Christmas. So that was his Christmas present for 1993. And yeah, we played the absolute arse out of it, constantly on it. It was one that was, you know, either me and him were playing each other, we had friends around, we were playing, we were never off it. We had other football games, but I think we didn't have Sensi at the time. So FIFA was where it was at. That was our game, our football game of choice. And we absolutely adored it. The stadium sounds, the gameplay, it just felt so authentic for the time. And people may look back at it now and laugh, but it just felt like the first proper football sim. And, you know, it had its quirks, like standing in front of the goalkeeper for him to kick the ball at you, bounces, and you just nick it in the neck. There's a sweet spot from just in front of the halfway line. So once you found all the exploits, you know, it did become a little bit farcical. Running away from the referee was a lot to laugh as well.
That's right. Oh, brilliant.
I remember the a few months later, you know, we'd done everything on it, won the World Cup and stuff. We used to do World Cups when our mates used to come round, and loved it. And then, you know, played out, got everything we could out of it. And my brother said to me, "Do you think they'll ever make another one?"
little did he know. We're still playing it today.
Yeah. God, how many have there been? If that's 93, if that was 93. Yeah. God, we've done 25 already, haven't we? So
bloody hell, man.
28 now we'll be on this year, 27?
See, FIFA games, again, we're talking about the age thing here, but FIFA games, to me, make you feel as old as the now record compilations.
Yeah, do you know what? I saw a tweet the other, I think it was last year, and someone was talking about getting nostalgic over FIFA 14. I was like, what?
14?
14. I was like, what? The game that I get nostalgic for is 19 years older than that.
I think we should rename ourselves. We're no grumpy old Sega bastards. We're geriatric Sega bastards, honestly.
We're getting there.
Mate, we are the Jack and Victor of podcasting, and I've told you to watch Still Games, so you'll get that reference whenever you watch it. Anybody Scottish, or maybe Irish as well, because it's quite popular over there as well, but they'll know what I'm talking about. But the Jack and Victor of Sega podcasts, that's us.
But yeah, if only they made another FIFA, right, mate.
I wish they would.
Do you know, I wouldn't mind, actually, in all seriousness. I mean, they did that NHL 94 Classic.
That's right, aye.
I wouldn't mind something like that. I know FIFA, the original FIFA, is still not most highly regarded for its gameplay in the same way that NHL is, but I still think there may be a market out there for, you know, FIFA Classic or something. I don't know.
Have to say, mate, I mean, when I don't know if you were inadvertently trying to trigger my Scotsman gene whenever you said, you know, I played FIFA, we won the World Cup. It's like if he mentions 66, man, I'm ending this phone call right now.
No, I don't. I'm pretty sure that you can't get the 66 roster in FIFA International soccer. I'm pretty sure Qatar were in the quarterfinals somehow, so...
Oh, who's it? Qatar were always the whipping boys, weren't they? Were they the weakest team in it? Because
if you, or something.
That's right. If you just wanted to scud a few goals and you played Brazil against Qatar, that was it.
That's it. Exactly, mate. But somehow they made it to the quarter or semi finals of one round. Beat one of my mates.
that was a badge of shame getting beat off Qatar, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Getting a box of shame there.
The thing is as well, but look how far they've come in terms of football as well. They're hosting the next bloody World Cup, aren't they?
Yeah, so, I know. If we knew them, we knew now.
I mean, if only they made another FIFA, you know.
I wonder if they're in the new one.
Oh, anyway, we'll move on to the final three now. And this is a game which... In terms of soundtrack, it's probably become more renowned as Sega Lord X's exit music.
We'll catch you next time.
But yes, it is Batman, the original 1989 movie Batman official game. Again, some Amiga roots here because I had the Spectrum version of it, which the first level, the Axis Chemical Plant, was blue and black. Look at that color palette. But obviously the Amiga pack I got was the Batman pack, so the Amiga version of that, again, it was, the Amiga game was very generic. It was, you know, walk for left to right, fire your batarang up, pull yourself up a level, throw a batarang, kill an enemy, go up to the next platform. You know, the driving and the batwing, you know, levels were probably the best part of the Amiga game, but as an actual, you know, video game in itself, the Mega Drive version of Batman is great fun. You know yourself, side-scrolling, kind of beat-em-up aspect, you've got limited number of batarangs, you've got, obviously, you do have your utility belt, you can throw your grapple up and things like that, but, it's a very... Again, for the limitations, shall we say, of the hardware at the time, again, much like Aladdin and The Lion King, it does a really good job of capturing the feel of the movie. It's moody, you know Gotham City looks great in it. The driving and batwing levels are side on, as opposed to being, you know, third person like the Amiga game, which I think works better for them. So it's just a great movie tie-in, something that was kind of really common. You know, around that time, you had the Batman game, RoboCop game, Total Recall game, you know, all the kind of big action movies of the 80s and early 90s all seem to get, well, Lethal Weapon had a video game, for Christ's sake. So I just, it's a brilliant movie tie-in, and it really does not only capture the kind of the feel of the movie in terms of mood and setting, but it's bloody good fun to play as well. The combat's good, as I said, the limited batarangs as well. You need to kind of try and, you want to go hand to hand combat, you want to kind of take them out from afar. There's enemies above. A really, really tight movie tie-in game, and it's a tough game. All of these games are tough. You know, that's the thing. Gamers today have got it easy.
Yeah.
I've just played 6 hours of Assassin's Creed. I think I'm going to save it here and then just go away and come back at my leisure. Nah. You've like comics on one life, die. It's like, you know, one energy bar, that's you. And Batman is very similar. I mean, I don't recall having lives in Batman. I'm sure that his life bar is just his face or the Batman symbol. Can't remember off the top of my head now what it is, but as you take hits, you're depleted, then down you go, and that's it, game over.
Yeah.
So again, tough as nails, but it's a great movie tie-in. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's a fantastic game. I think it's got, thanks to Sega Lord X as well, I think it's a bit more well-known, it's got a reputation now, and I think rightly so. I mean, there were so many different versions of the 1989 Batman film that were adapted to video games. You had the Amiga, and the Amiga was part of the whole set that were published by Ocean, was it?
Yeah, it was, yeah. I think all the kind of movie tie-ins that you've seen on the Amiga were all like Ocean. Even that hellish Terminator 2 game, Jesus, oh, man, God, that's so bad.
Yeah. But, this one was done by Sunsoft, who I think also did the NES game. But yeah, this was its own thing. And even though, you know, you can tell that it's an early Mega Drive game, very early, you know, it's 1990 that it came out, it's still brilliant fun. And it buries Batman Returns, the sequel on the Mega Drive. Batman Returns is a shadow of this game. This one really is the real deal. And yeah, the vehicle levels and everything just all meshes so well. A little bit of repetitive gameplay, but you expect that from games of that era, but a good challenge.
Yep.
Brilliant game. Yeah, superb choice, mate. I do kind of miss the days when you used to have film adaptations to video games for everything. Now it's like you don't get them at all.
No, you very rarely see anything. Let's get a Godzilla versus Kong movie. Oh, hold on a minute. Primal Rage, right, we're fine. scrap that. That's been done.
Oh, but I wouldn't mind a new Primal Rage. We don't have anything like that at the moment. I mean, closest is Killer Instinct if you want to see monsters fighting each other. We don't even have any Darkstalkers games anymore. But yeah.
Is it Raptor versus, what's the wolf?
Oh, Sabrewolf.
There you go. You know, that's about the closest you'll get to Primal Rage now. But it's a cracking movie tie-in. I think it would be nice to maybe see at least something along the lines of, they were kind of printing money, wasn't it? It was very much part of the marketing back then. You know, you had your movie, you know, you had like chocolate bars. I mean, see Batman, especially in 1989, it was like you used to get these trading cards or like movie cards that had the most disgusting cardboard tasting pink bubble gum.
Gotcha.
Do you remember them?
I remember them, yeah.
And people just bought them because obviously they get the cards that had like kind of stickers and cards in there, little bits for the movie and all that. It was like chocolate bars, like the actual Batman chocolate bars. They were minging. It was like three. They were like chalk with like fondant in them, but they were like bat signal signed. It was like three or four in a row. They were honking. But now you don't get anything like that. It was very much a case of trying to put these films into the psyche of everybody everywhere to drive, you know, obviously ticket sales. But with no internet, they had to do other ways of marketing. So that's what they did.
Yeah, I mean, I do kind of miss it. I know that obviously games are far too expensive. I mean, this one, for example, as I just said, they've got versions everywhere. Even now, they'd only have to make one SKU. But games are just so expensive; it's too much of a risk. But yeah, it's such a top draw one, mate. Lot of good memory. It evokes memories of the film playing it. So it's absolutely perfect. So brilliant stuff, mate. If you'd like to tell our listeners, then, what is your penultimate choice?
The penultimate choice is one which I believe it's one of the the kind of rarer or more kind of sought after slash expensive Mega Drive games. And this is picked purely because, one, it's a bloody good game to play, another side-scrolling arcade-based beat-em-up, but because it invokes memories of an arcade game, which I think it's very loosely based on in terms of visual style and gameplay, because on the ferry from Dover to Calais on the trip in primary seven with the school, one of the many arcade games, there was the Simpsons arcade game and there was the Turtles arcade game. And this one is Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles, The Hyperstone Heist. What a bloody game this is.
What a game it is. Yeah, so this one's based on the sequel from the arcade, which is Turtles in Time. So it's a little bit of skullduggery from Nintendo's part here, because they paid for the exclusivity of the actual Turtles in Time port. So Konami had to do something different. So it's a little bit like the whole Street Fighter Special Championship Edition thing, where Capcom could call it Turbo, but for all extents and purposes, it is Turbo. Hyperstone Heist, they just rearranged the game a little bit, moved the levels around, introduced some new aspects, and just gave it a different name. But yeah, it very much is, for the most part, it's 90% Turtles in Time. So that's an absolutely superb game.
I mean, everything about the combat as well is great. I mean, that kind of first level, you start obviously in the kind of the sewers. You get different kind of foot soldiers, different coloured foot soldiers. They've got different skills and moves and weapons to come at you. And obviously, if you get in close with a turtle, she just basically pick one up and ragdoll somebody.
Yeah, it's like the Hulk, isn't it, and Loki.
Silly god. Stupid god. it's absolutely, even the animation, everything about it is just, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous looking game. It holds up really well today. And that's the thing as well, that Turtles game that got announced by the people who did the Streets of Rage 4.
Yeah.
I don't think their turtle sprites look as good as the ones in Hyperstone Heist.
they're a lot smaller in that one, and I think it's because it's a four-player focus game with a lot of sprites on bits. They're not as big and bold as they are in Hyperstone.
Even the faces don't look as spot on. I think that the Mega Drive representation of the characters, the actual look of them, they look lifted out the cartoon. I think it's absolutely brilliant. It just is a striking visual style. Again, the controls are spot on. The moveset is brilliant. Varied enemies, different settings. Obviously, you kind of come up out of the streets after you've been in the sewers, and there's various levels, obviously, above ground, and kind of just a brilliant, brilliant game. I can see why it's sought after. Absolutely superb game. Really had a lot of fun playing it.
Yeah, I think it's 150 quid that you're looking at for that one now.
I'm glad I have an EverDrive. Thank you.
It's definitely not the most expensive one on your list, mate.
Well,
that award goes to Mega Turrican.
Yes, that's some crazy stuff. Especially if a Turrican 2 is better. You know, oh, here we go. That's it. We're looking back to that.
But yeah, it's a Hyperstone Heist. It's one actually that my wife frequently likes to play with me.
Hi.
When she's had a wee tipple, if we're up here and I've got the Mega Drive one, she'll say, "Oh, can we play a bit of the Turtles game?" So
it's oh, well.
Yeah. So I've got it. I haven't got the Mega Drive version. That one I have to play over the EverDrive. But do we have the SNES port? They're both very, very good. The Mega Drive one. It's just different. I couldn't really say whether I like one better or worse. The music in the Mega Drive game is absolutely phenomenal. I absolutely love the music in it. It's just, they're all their own arrangements, but they nail the sound of the TV show so well. It's just another one of these games, like Aladdin, absolutely nails the feel of the source material. You feel like you're in the cartoon when you're playing.
Even the kind of the intro to the title screen. It's like right out the cartoon. You know, it kind of pans down in the city and the sewer opens up and they jump out and you've got each character in the corner of the screen, stuff like that. So it's very, very close to the original kind of source material, as you say.
Yeah, it is. I think it's superior to the 89 arcade game, which is still very, very good. I played that most, I think. I remember playing that in the arcades, and then I got it when it was on the Xbox Live Arcade. I don't know if you ever got a chance to play it on there.
No, I did not. No.
Because it's one of those that's been delisted now. I nearly got all the achievements on it. But yeah, I played that one nonstop. But I think Hyperstone is better. That and Turtles in Time are the best Turtles games ever made, I think, and two of the best beat 'em ups ever made, in my opinion, as well. Especially great if you've got someone to play with, they're brilliant games. In fact, I was even playing with my daughter a few months ago. She's like, which one's the girl? Well, the one with the red bandana. Don't tell her, anyone.
Don't think Raphael would appreciate that.
I don't think he would.
Is he not the most macho one?
He's the one with the attitude.
Exactly.
He wouldn't appreciate it, mate.
Just as well that only, as Ben Affleck says in Jane Silent Bob, fictional characters. Yeah, exactly. Am I getting through to you at all?
Otherwise, I'll get a sigh through my door or something, mate. Oh, yes, but a superb choice, mate. Brilliant game. But if you'd like to tell our listeners your final choice, the Omega Drive 15.
Yes, the final game is one of a series, and it's the first one of that series. Again, some Amiga roots in there, because the first time I played it was on that system. We had, obviously, like Soviet Strike, Jungle Strike, but I'm sticking with the original Desert Strike. Just such a fun... As fun as war games can be, but again, the controls in the Mega Drive version are a lot looser. It plays a lot better on the Mega Drive from memory, from what the Amiga did. But just a bloody simplistic yet challenging game. You know, the maps are relatively sparse, but you've got obviously your satellite areas, your airfields, your various levels of enemy, your heavy artillery, your lighter artillery. There's kind of wee checkpoints with guards, and you blow them up, and there's prisoner of war camps. You need to let your wee ladder go down and save them, and then you run out of hellfires, and you've got to find more stock, a shop, six hellfires and a boat lion brew, mate. You know, your kind of your supplies you need to find, and restock your chopper and kind of finish your mission. Great fun game to play. I'd say the Mega Drive is kind of weird. Well, I played it on the Amiga. I remember hearing people talk about it. I think I might have seen it on an episode of Games Master as a challenge as well, back in the day, because I definitely seen it running on a Mega Drive back then, which prompted me to want to have it whenever it came out on the Amiga. But that's just great fun. Although criminally, I've never played Jungle or Soviet Strike, so I need to fix that.
Yeah, you know, Jungle's actually my favourite one of the series.
Well, there you go.
I think but a lot of people say that. I think most people will say that Desert Strike is the best one, and rightly so. It's a fantastic game. There's so much going on in it. I mean, it just felt so revolutionary because, again, I didn't own it when I was younger, but I played it with friends. I remember, I think one rented it, one owned it, so I played my fair bit of it. I even borrowed it from one of them, and it was just brilliant fun, but engaging, and you know, it's fast and it's fluid the way that the chopper moves about, but there's all these other things that you have to think about, your objectives, your resource management. You know, you've got limits to how many missiles you've got and stuff. You can't just go in steaming and just drop your biggest bombs on everything, which at the time that felt like a big deal. it's in most games now, this sort of ammo, looking after your ammo, but back then it just felt pretty revolutionary. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just involving, engaging, and just a lot of fun to play. It's a classic. It's one of those games. Again, it's another EA game. And EA just used to make, EA of that era just used to churn out classics, and that's among the very best of them.
Mm-hmm. They weren't always money-grabbing, lazy, studio-killing people. No. I could have said a different word there, but I went with people. Didn't want to get sued.
No, I mean, even though Trip Hawkins, you know, as we heard from Tom Kalinske in our interview with him, you know, who heard that he was, you know, arguing pretty hard to get a better share of their licensing fee.
Reverse engineering the Mega Drive to think they could get around publishing fees. Yeah.
So they weren't angels by any means.
The seeds were being sown back then, mate. We've seen the warning signs, let's be honest.
But what they did make, I mean, they made exceptional games, and this really was one of them. Mm-hmm. It's another one. I think they're all challenging games on this list, but this one was brutally hard. Another one I had to use passwords to see everything for. Great memories of this one. And I own it now, and it's one that I still return to it fairly regularly. So again, brilliant choice, mate. Superb. And that rounds out your 15. So how has that first 5 or 6 months or so of having your latest Mega Drive just been for you, mate?
Absolutely astounding. Retro Fury had recommended a brilliant SCART to HDMI box that I've picked up. So the quality that I'm getting on my TV, my monitor, is for a system that age and games that old, it looks absolutely brilliant. I know there's more expensive, you know, ways to connect to TV, but this looks, you know, absolutely brilliant to my eyes. So I'm just having a hell of a lot of fun, you know. I've not played anywhere near the full library. Every time I load it up, you know, I'll try and pick something else or kind of dabble in different games and try this and that, because I think I've got pretty much everything that I could want on there plus more. So it is great to just kind of go in and as literally like a kid in a candy shop. It's like, you know, if I could go back and show myself age 13 or 14 this Mega Drive with this cartridge, I think I would just lose my shit, let's be honest. It'd be like, James, excuse how fat, wrinkled and old you're going to be come 41, right? But see, I have brought this Mega Drive back for you to look at. It's got every game you could want. You can go home and tell your parents to shove their Amiga up their ass. This is what you should have. But no, it's been great. And again, mate, the generosity is through the roof. Honestly, I was blown away whenever I opened that box up. And I say, I've still got the wee kind of letter you put in with it. I've kept that, and I will do for many years. So obviously, again, thank you so much, mate.
Mate, it was a pleasure. After recording that Mega Drive episode, I had to get you one, knowing that you wanted one for so long, that you had one fleetingly. And then, you know, just hearing your Mega Drive memories of when you played them, how fondly those memories were, just thought that you absolutely needed one. And I'm glad that it's been getting so much love and attention. And if anyone's following James on Twitter, whenever he posts a picture of it, he's kept it looking like $1 million as well. So it's in brilliant hands, mate. So it's my pleasure, no problem at all. I'm just glad you're enjoying it.
Oh, it's superb, mate. I say it's quite funny. I put a picture up. I just goes the amount of love that's on Twitter, you know. And Mega Drive episodes tend to do really well when we do them. I mean, the Mega Drive at 30 years is still our most downloaded episode yet. It's still going strong, it's still getting downloads to it, so that the Mega Drive obviously holds a special place in a lot of people's hearts. Because I set the Mega Drive up beside the computer, which is running on just now, because I like to have the system we're talking about running. It kind of just fires me up to get right into it, because I see it running, it's sitting beside me. But I sat it on the window ledge earlier. The sun was coming in, and I took a picture of it, and I put it in black and white, and I put it on Twitter and just said, Sega Mega Drive, that's all. That's the tweet. And so far it's had 108 likes. You know, it triggers something in a lot of people. There's a real, real fondness for the Mega Drive in the community. And now I'm getting to kind of go back and play that and experience that. It's just, it's wonderful.
Yeah, that's the thing, mate. There's such a love for it. I mean, even going back to, you know, the whole console wars is kind of built around this upstart of the Sega Mega Drive. It's such a fondly remembered console for so many people, which is why, you know, we had the anniversary and you've got the Mega Drive Mini now. And it's just great that it lives on in so many ways. We're talking about the Dreamcast living on in our last our previous episode. The Mega Drive lives on in the same way. I mean, there's still games getting made for it. You know, it seems like every 6 months there's some new flash cart or technology or something to do something whizzy with it, whether it's playing Mega CD games natively without a Mega CD, all that sort of craziness. So it's brilliant that it lives on. I don't think it's just a console that never ages. You talk about how good it looks. It still looks fantastic. There's still such a marvelous look to all of those games. It's one that I still play and one that you're still playing. I think both of us will be playing for many years more.
So sitting there, I'm just going to need to collect my pension, then come back to play some Champion Edition.
Well, we will be, mate. When the Xbox and PlayStation stores all get taken down eventually for our current consoles, which I think, following current news, they probably all will. We won't be able to play any old games. We'll be back on the old Sega systems. But you know,
see, that's why I just don't leave them, mate. That's it. As I say, I don't do it to be hip or to try and fit in with the retro community. Or I genuinely get more fun now from and more, you know, just general enjoyment from playing either Mega Drive, Saturn, or Dreamcast games. They're just a totally different feel entirely. I mean, Outriders came out on Game Pass today, and it's just it'd have been good if it came out when Gears of War 1 came out. You know, it looks lovely, but it's very generic. I just don't get that same kind of feeling of kind of warmth and maybe it's nostalgia stuck in here in these old bones of mine somewhere, but I just, honestly, I'd rather play these three systems for years and years to come than any of the modern systems. And I think they're all about gameplay. They didn't have the kind of technology to produce the greatest graphics. Obviously, Dreamcast at the time was the closest we come to kind of arcade perfection, but there's just something so special about these machines, what they meant at the time, what they tried to do, that the culture they were part of, the age we were at the time that they came out, you know, just friends that we had, the memories we shared. So special, special machines.
Absolutely, mate. I couldn't have said it any better than myself. So I think that's a perfect place to end it. So we'd love to hear from you, our listeners, if you enjoyed the episode. If you've got any more suggestions for must-play games for James with his Mega Drive and his Mega Everdrive, please get in touch. You can find us at The Sega Guys. You can find James at The Segaholic, and you can find me at Swooper_D. But until next time, stay retro. See you soon.
Sega!
My favorite... Jungle scum. If you want to slam dunk like Robinson. If you want to bring down the best in the world.
Boy, it's a lift on a pterodactyl.
If you want to smash trash in monster hell or fry the demons with electric spells. If you want to be a Sega nut, get yourself a cyber.